I want to start this episode off with a thank you. I always do that at the end of the episode, but maybe some of you don't always make it that far. So right here at the top, thank you. Thank you to all of you who listen to this show. And thank you to those of you who interact and let us know how it affects you. A particular thank you to the many people I heard from over the last couple of weeks who reached out to me to say that listening to this show motivated them to vote. I cannot tell you how much that means to me. It's been an intense week here in the US and around the world, but I want to make sure that this is a place for positivity and joy. Gaming is a great hobby, and what brings us together is a common love of it. I've had some really dark moments this week, wondering how I'd be able to talk about video games, but I realized it's okay to still have fun. In fact, it's essential. And there are many of you listening, or who used to listen, who disagree with me and Christian and our guests sometimes. You disagree with us about games or about our worldview, and that's okay. We are all family here, and often your family disagrees. But let's all decide right now to love each other and take care of each other and keep things in perspective. For 90 plus minutes every week, you know that we are going to talk with passion from the heart. And I hope that's something. I mentioned voting at the top of every episode for the last several months, asked geeks to speak. And those of you who did, thank you. Those of you who didn't, hopefully you realize how important it is. These geeks, right here, us, we're going to keep on speaking for as long as we're able. So I hope you'll hang out with us as we do. It's time for the music. Wherever you are, whenever you are, and however you happen to be listening, we're so glad you've chosen to tune in to DLC, your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, Casper. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Kanata, which is spelled with two N's and one T, and I'm joined by my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who is celebrating a birthday today, Mr. Christian Spicer. Happy birthday, Christian.
Thank you, sir. Also, quickly, if you can hear my voice right now, no, I love you. If you're mad right now, find a way to give back. Find a charity to support. I recommend setting it up as a recurring monthly payment so that you do it now and you do it in perpetuity. Put love out into the world. Make it a recurring thing. If you're happy now, find a way to make someone else happy too. Maybe even a stranger, someone you don't know. Take that happiness and spread it. And join me in doubling down on love.
Well said, man. You doing anything fun for your birthday?
Spending it with my family and planning my 2017 of doubling down on love. I will say this, which is neither something I'm proud of necessarily for the past 4 years, but since Tuesday, I have either done more or committed to more charity work, volunteerism, and have made more donations to charities that are important to me than I had in the last 4 years. So, you know,
good.
Take that lemonade, right? And listen to Beyonce's Lemonade.
We got a lot of really great games to talk about. I think it was important to start the show that way, and we are very passionate guys, and we feel very strongly about stuff. But lots of games to talk about. It's a really exciting time of year for gaming as we approach the holidays and all the big stuff comes out. And some fun news to talk about as well, but I'm excited because we have a fantastic guest to do it with. You know that DLC is always your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian, but this week I'm excited because once again, DLC stands for Die, Live, Continue, because we've got, once again, the host of the Spawn on Me podcast, friend of the show, Mr. Khalif Adams. Hey, Khalif.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for being here, man. How's your week been? You all right? How you doing?
The week has been okay. It's been an interesting week because of all the trials and tribulations that have been happening in the world, but it's been nice to hear folks kind of come together and put out good vibes in the world. And thank you for the beautiful words from both you and Christian today, because I think that that's really, really needed in the space. So, you know, I'll add my one little bit of that is, you know, it's time to have the uncomfortable conversation with people in your life, and that is also love. Just remember that. Just remember to be sure to be able to speak truth to people and share good vibes and good spaces.
Well said. All right, guys, let's kick the show off the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. Because a lot of things are overshadowed, but we're still talking about games. And you can always submit stories for our consideration by using our hashtag on Twitter, which is DLCSOTW, or by visiting our subreddit, which is 5x5dlc.reddit.com. Some fun stuff to talk about this week, some rumors, some news. Khalif, as our guest, you get first pick of stories. So what would you consider to be your story of the week?
Oh, man, the NES Classic getting sold out. That was really rough for folks. People were not happy about this at all.
Yeah, man. This thing went sold like gangbusters. I think we all predicted that it would do well because it's inexpensive, $60, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't think any of us really anticipated how in short supply it would be. I don't understand
really?
What...
Really?
You think that it was obvious that it was going to be a...
I was the only one that participated in Amiibo craze, so I guess I was the only one that realized so this was going to happen.
If they can't make little plastic figurines, how are they going to make a retro console? That's what you're saying?
I'm split between the middle. I'm not on team, they're such idiots, how do they not know? And I'm also not on team, they're purposely restraining supply. I think Nintendo is a very conservative company when it comes to manufacturing. And I think that they underestimate things and ship out what they can and then try to ramp up production later versus the Disney Infinity, here's 10 million Hulk action figures. Oopsie.
So did either of you guys get one? Did either of you guys want to get one? What's your situation?
I'm thoroughly confused. I'm in the camp of confused camp. Because okay. I'm like, why is this a thing? I remember getting MAME like 10 years ago. Why is this a thing?
Yeah, it's not like the first time we're able to play these things, you know? Most of them are backwards compatible on whatever Nintendo console you already have.
Yeah. And I would say it's kind of maybe in a worse condition, in a worse state than, you know, putting it in this small kind of container, which is great. You know, the nostalgia is great. It's nice to see people are super excited to get the small box again. But the way that you have to be super close to the TV because the cords are short, like the cord for the controller is short. It seems like there are a lot of limitations to this that could have been mitigated if, you know, Nintendo just made it something that was better on the virtual console, or they gave you the option to purchase more stuff right out the box, or give you at least the chance to kind of pick and choose the games that you want to do it a la carte instead of just giving you stock games in there. So it's an interesting development in with the way that this came out and that folks are kind of clamoring for it. I'm like, don't you folks have a computer?
Never underestimate the power of member berries.
Remember Nintendo? Remember?
I don't know, man. I bought one. I got lucky. My F5 skills are still elite level, apparently. I wanted to buy two. I wanted to get one for my parents for Christmas because they have wanted to get back in gaming and, you know, hadn't played in years. And I've recommended some iPad and some iPhone games. And, you know, they played some on Wii and stuff like that. I think aside from the cabling being short, Khalif, I think that's 100% correct. It's kind of weird with the TV sizes that people have. But otherwise, I think this is a very smart product. Like, yeah, I can get the games on the Wii Virtual Console or the 3DS or the Wii U, but that console is going to be put away at some point, right? Just because of the upgrade cycle of Nintendo consoles, you get the Switch, you get the Switch U, you get the Super Switch, whatever they have down the pipeline. But this is a thing that will forever be this thing. It will forever have these games on it. You have it hooked up, you know, stashed away and then pulled out into the middle of the floor, apparently, when you want to play it. And it's not, and I got the one I got. She's not going to listen to this, so I can spoil it for her. But I got it for my daughter for Christmas. And, like, this is going to be her first video game console. And that really excites me that, like, this is the thing that we can sit down and play together, and it's very kid-friendly. Yeah, I could, you know, huddle her up next to the computer and we could play, or I could get the Wii U or give her a 3DS, but it just seems like a very easy way to introduce people to these games and to introduce people to a hobby that I love, and that is safe and friendly and not confusing. It's not what games you, it's not like I would give my mom this thing and say, here's the list of games you should download. It's here's the thing. Go explore. Go have fun. So I think they knocked it out of the park. I do think the cabling is weird. I don't understand that. But otherwise, I think this is kind of, I think I talked about it when they announced it. I think it's genius tier. I don't know.
I think you hit the nail on the head in a large sense. I don't understand the scarcity thing. I feel like it should have been easy for them to flood the channel with this. They say they're going to have restocks throughout the holiday season. But I think this is going to be one of those items that's always going to be hard to find. I remember back when the Wii launched, and there was those websites that like had maps of your area, and they would ping stores and find out when the Wii was arriving. I think it's going to be similar to that. I do not understand the people that are paying like $500 on eBay for this thing. I think the whole draw is that it's $60. You know, that's the entire selling point is, hey, it's an inexpensive impulse buy. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's more to it than that.
No, I don't understand the high price. And it's just like, that gives me my frowny face, and just in terms of society. But that's, you know, capitalism or whatever, I guess. That those are people's businesses. That's how they put food on the table for their families, is that they, you know, do a good job seeking out this product and then flipping it. And you know, it makes me sad. I wonder if Nintendo had sold this for $100, would that? Is it Nintendo, their supply-demand curve is off? Or I don't know who's buying these things. When I got mine, I looked briefly at eBay, and I was just like, no, that's not what this is for. This is not, I don't need this to like make sure we eat lunch tomorrow. Like, let's use this and have joy with it.
I'll tell you this. I will jump into this market when they make the power glove accessory.
There you go. When they do that, then I'm down. It's a tiny power glove.
It's like only for your pinky, and it'll be dope.
Well, W. Matthew in the chat says that he would only care about a Super Nintendo version. Like, can you guys anticipate them doing that? I think that would be kind of interesting to do a tiny Super Nintendo after this one, maybe in a year.
Those little slide clicky buttons would be really annoying on that. on that new console. I wouldn't be surprised. That would be a cool, I would think it would be a cool addition. I mean, if you get the kind of cabling stuff right, because I think that is a deterrent for some things, for some people, especially if it's like, you know, where are you going to put this thing when I have all these other consoles and all these other things that I need to put in my TV stand. But it wouldn't be a bad idea. You know, I want to see them flesh this stuff out more. And give you, I would love to see them give you more choice in the game space right out the bat, though. That would be really cool, because there were a lot of bad Super Nintendo games too. So,
well, there, yeah, but there was thousands of them. You know, there's plenty of awesome stuff. But yeah, I agree with
name
you.
Name one
thing.
Bad Super Nintendo game.
Oh man, it's interesting. It's kind of to me the equivalent of a music fan buying a record player. You know, it's like, yeah, retro and cool and, you know, I don't know, hipstery. But more power to, I think you make a very solid case for it, Christian. And I'm looking forward to hearing all of the fun that you guys have after you unwrap it on Christmas morning. So what is your story of the week, Christian?
So my story of the week is not on this little handy dandy. I think people know this, that we cheat during the show. This isn't all just coming off the top of our heads. Sometimes it is, but we're looking at a document. We compile things over the course of the week. Sorry, magic. I'm a podcaster X. What was that, magician? Magician X at like Women's Secrets on Fox.
I remember that show. It was so good.
Talking about giving back or whatever. I don't want to say everything, because I don't know if the family were kind of helping. Listens, I don't know. But I, like I said, wanted to find a way to work both micro and macro joy and good in the world. And a buddy of mine and a stand-up comedian named Steve Simone, whose new album is coming out soon, which is phenomenal. Like, I listened to an early preview of it, and it was so good it made me want to quit comedy. Like, it's amazing. He has one out already, his new one. I think it's called What's Up, Nerds. Steve Simone. It's clean, like this show. Anyway, buy that album. But anyway, he works with a charity a lot called Regular Heroes, and he's putting together this thing. I'll tell you the full story later, and it's sad and heartwarming and full of, you know, all the things that, you know, life is. And I wanted to get involved and help them out with this holiday thing we're doing. So I reached out to a couple of developers, and some have gotten back to me. Others have not yet. I'm still hoping they will. But I will highlight two that just filled my heart with love at a time when I needed it the most. And Insomniac and Respawn. And oh, also, we have bonus content at the end of this episode where I talk to Manny Hagopian, who's one of the writers of Titanfall 2. Anyway, I reached out to them and kind of explained what we're trying to do and what they came back with and what we are going to be able to do for this family over the holidays is just so incredible. So I would tell you to buy Ratchet & Clank anyway. I would tell you to buy Titanfall 2 anyway. But man, oh man, I think time and time again, this community, while it's easy to look at, you know, the annoying stuff, the Gamergate stuff that comes out of this, or the trolling, or the teabagging, or the whatever that comes out of the gaming community often, I think time and time again, we need to highlight, and I think, Jeff, we do a pretty good job on this show, but like Extra Life, speedruns, Child's Play, and now just seeing this community come together just from me, a single person reaching out to some contacts I had at developers and seeing how they have rallied around this one instance, I cried a lot. It's amazing.
Khalif, this is a good opportunity for you to talk about what you guys are doing with the Spawn for Good.
Oh yeah. Well, we have our event coming up in January, and we're going to be focusing on foster care this year. So that's going to be a new twist on what we do with our social activist gaming stuff. So we'll have more stuff to talk about in the next couple of
weeks. Oh, I hope I didn't just let the cat out of the bag. I thought it was. Is that not public knowledge yet?
No.
It is now, Jeff. Like 100%
is now. Sorry. No, it's totally fine. No, it's totally fine because we're trying to figure out and make sure it's actually good this time. We did it last year and it was good. It was just that we want to make sure it's even better this year. But we've been having some folks in our own crew. Sharif Jackson, who's been a guest on the show as well, was doing some stuff for Extra Life this past weekend with Button Bash Mash. I think that's what their crew is called. So yeah, we're always in that space and trying to make sure that we're using our words and powers for good. And that's awesome to hear that the folks from Titanfall and Ratchet & Clank are doing some real cool stuff too. I'm excited to hear what that all transpired to be.
I think it's awesome that you brought that up, Christian, but I'm going to give you a pass and let you bring up a second story of the week.
Nintendo Switch for $250, you guys. What?
$250 or $200 if you want the smaller hard drive version, I guess.
And this is Rumors.
Unconfirmed, but it seems like a lot of people are picking up on this story.
But does that mean it's going to be $10,000 on eBay? Like, these two stories buttress together with Khalif's and then this. Like, I think we're screwed.
This is called good luck getting a Switch when it launches.
I'll trade you my NES Classic Mini for half a Switch.
Half a Switch? You know what's sad is that they literally can give you half a Switch. It just snaps right off. So here's the genesis of the story. If you're not up to date on it, what?
Not the genesis.
Here's the Super Nintendo of this story. If you're not up to date on it, the UK retailer Game, it's a big chain in the UK that handles a lot of video game stuff. They evidently leaked their wholesale price of the Nintendo Switch. There's two SKUs. A $199 version that has a smaller hard drive, and then a larger hard drive, $250 version. So this is in pounds, right, or euros.
No, but it's pounds.
It is pounds, you're right. But they say that this is going to translate, it's region-specific, so it's going to be $200 or $250 here as well in North America. So I think that shatters everybody's expectation. I mean, we went on record on this show of our predictions of what the Switch is going to cost, and we were all in the $350 range.
No, I'm pretty sure I said exactly this. Go
back. I don't know. It's too bad it's on tape. I say not on tape. It's digital. Anyway, so Khalif, what do you think, man? This is like a no-brainer now, right? $200?
Oh, also, sorry. Before Khalif, the bigger hard drive also has a packed-in game, is the rumor. And I don't know a demo disc or what it's going to be.
Zelda?
No, shut up. Slap my face and call me Susan. No way.
That would be the game changer right there, right? They threw Zelda on that hard drive. I mean, I'm already sold now. Once you give me that price point, I'm like, all right. I was on the fence. I'm like, all right, I don't know. Maybe kind of sort of I'll jump back into Nintendo land. But that is definitely a price point that I'm like, all right, just tell me when. I'll get online. I'll be that person up at 4 o'clock in the morning trying to hit the button real fast while everybody else
trying
to hit the
button. I'm good. I got practice. I got NES Classic practice right now, Khalif. I'm primed and ready to go. F5.
They are not gonna, at $200, they are not going to be able to make enough of these. If that is real, if this is actually the price, it is going to crush. I mean, it's coming out less expensive than the Wii was. It's coming out less expensive than the 3DS.
Yeah.
Is? Mm. Like, that is insane. Couple that with this quote. And again, you know, take this with a grain of salt. But this is a quote from the from NVIDIA, who is putting the chip in this thing, saying that they've been working on this technology for many years with Nintendo. They're excited about it. And they say that this device is unlike anything that anybody's ever seen. They're really proud of it.
And then they cover up the NVIDIA shield that they have sitting next to them. Like, don't look at that.
Nobody has ever seen it because nobody bought it. Nobody knew we were making it.
Oh, man.
Here, some Tegra processes for everyone.
Here you go. You know, even at $250, I think this thing crushes. It really is. I think Nintendo realizing what made the Wii such a massive success, and that is low barrier to entry. I mean, you're certainly seeing that proof of concept with this Nintendo Retro console as well. Low barrier to entry. People want in, and they don't want to have to, you know, rationalize spending an arm and a leg.
I think it has the potential, and not to be the Good Morning America console the way the Wii was, but I think if it comes in at this, you know, affordable, air quote, price point, and launches with a Zelda game, what's the last Nintendo console to do that? It was a pretty successful one for them, right? Like, yeah. It was the same thing. It was the holdover Zelda game from the console before, but it launched, you know, right at the time the console came out. Everybody was excited for it. You could go out and buy it. It also had, I think it launched with Luigi's Mansion, the Wii. Or no, that was GameCube, sorry. But it launched with Zelda, and now they're thinking about launching this with a Zelda and also maybe a Mario and a under $300 price point. Like, that's exciting.
Yeah, we'll know more in January, but right now it's that could be massive, and it makes me excited. Like, yeah, you know, Nintendo doing well in this marketplace is good for gamers. And
agree.
All right, so you guys have left me a lot of really juicy stories to pick from.
You're the one that gave me two, dude. So that's on you.
No, I'm not being sarcastic. I'm there's legit like good stories to choose from. One of which is probably, you know, obviously going to be my story of the week, which is out of nowhere, this third party company through HTC has announced and put up for pre-order this week a wireless solution for the HTC Vive.
Insane.
Out of nowhere, like with no fanfare, it just sort of like was put up on this Chinese website through the Vive X. So Vive X is a thing that HTC sponsored that is a way to motivate companies to sort of innovate on that platform in a way that a lot of companies do, where they incentivize people to come up with fun accessories and stuff. And this company, TPcast, came up with a wireless upgrade kit for existing Vives. So all of us, like Christian and myself and a lot of other people who have been saying, well, you know, someday when VR is wireless, it's going to be so much. Someday is now. they evidently came up with this thing. It sold out in 18 minutes on their website. I was awake at 7 a.m. when it went on sale, and I was on that website twitching. I could not bring myself. I think a Chinese website is a bridge too far for me. It's like it is unconfirmed that this thing works well. There are some people that have had
Kobe Bryant. Are you not going to trust Black Mamba?
Wait, Kobe's down with us?
He was the first. He was the first. Khalif's interested now.
What?
He was the first. They called him consumer, like the first consumer to try it publicly. And I'm like, one, Kobe ain't a consumer. Kobe is a mogul. But
right.
You know, you go with yourself, HTC. But yeah, there's like pictures of him doing it. And there's a picture of him. I think it's legit. Like, after he took it off, and the dude has the biggest expletive eating grin on his face. Like, it's a really cute picture of this, you know, grizzled basketball player.
So, as much as I respect Kobe's consumer electronics cred, I mean, he was in a Modern Warfare ad. So, you know, they're right there. But There's reports that a 15 millisecond lag is what you're getting, which is really low, but I need to have some people have some hands-on with this thing before I
No,
I
Jeff, you're
pledge.
The person. You're
I
the
know, person that I want has, it. Mm-hmm. I want it.
You're the one that does it for us. You can't. Who's going to try it if it's not you?
Dude, honestly, if it was an English language website, I would have bought it. But I clicked on it, and it was a Chinese website, and I was like, I know. You know what? I can't.
I'm sorry.
It feels insane to, like, try to click on things that are, you know, like have Google Translate get me to my buying. I don't know. I just,
I'm disappointed. You could have used Google Translate. You had it in your hands. You could have done it. You could have did it for the people.
Yeah. I mean, I think my son woke me up at the appropriate hour specifically for that reason. And I didn't do it. I'm very curious to see how this thing does. Another reason that I kind of tipped me over to not doing it is they said they are also going to have two versions, and one of them is going to have a longer battery, and that one is not available for pre-order yet.
Yeah, but the battery's in your pocket is where that one goes, right? Yeah. And this one is like just on the unit.
Yeah. Mm. Well, and people are saying that it actually makes the Vive more comfortable because the battery's in the back, and so it sort of counterbalances the headset better.
I guess we'll never know, Jeff. I guess Cliff and I are just...
That is literally the worst thing that has happened this week.
I mean,
I was worried about that, though, how heavy that yell was amazing. The headset is fairly heavy at some point if you just keep it on too long, and I was worried about, you know, if it's going to be added weight and if it's going to be something that's going to maybe mess up any of the kind of sensors that's on there. But it seems like, you know, if Kobe said it's all right.
Kobe said it's all right. Passing the ball.
He put up like 61 in his final game. Yeah, like, and Kobe, I trust, you know?
He made a good rap album.
The other thing is, like, no, you know, the people that have tried this for minutes, right? I want to know how it plays for hours. Like, is this thing going to heat up and burn the back of my skull? I don't know.
When is the last time a piece of technology with a battery in it had fire problems, Jeff? Right. I don't think.
Oh, yeah.
But this is Chinese. It's not Korean, so you're safe.
Okay.
I wonder if this tech is actually going to get pushed out to other VR platforms, though.
Well, they say that it's cool. They say that it's modular, and it really could work on any headset. It's not specific to the Vive, right? It nothing in it needs the Vive in particular to work. So yeah, you can work it with Oculus or whatever.
You order it for PSVR and it's like the instructions are like, okay, first cut the cord of your PSVR. And then you cut it and the next page is like, ha ha, sucker. Now order an HTC and you're like, son of a gun.
I don't know, man. I really, I think this could be a real,
oh,
real
man.
Game changer.
Great tape 51 in the chat. Guess I need to find a new podcast for the latest hands-on in VR.
No! All
right. Hey, I'll trade you my Nest Mini if you go out and buy this thing.
Really?
Maybe.
I can't buy it now. Christian, it's sold out in 18 minutes. Too little,
so,
too
so
late.
So is the Nest Mini.
Yeah. In other news, the that Telltale game that we all heard about that they were going to do back in 2015 when they were like, hey, we got a Marvel game and we're keeping it. We're not going to tell you which Marvel property it is. It's Guardians of the Galaxy. So that leaked this week because of the SAG-AFTRA strike. There was a list of games that need to renegotiate their contracts. And on it was Codename Blue Steel or whatever it was called. Blue Harvest, I guess a reference to the Star Wars Family Guy, which, and then it said dash Guardians of the Galaxy. So good job on the code naming, guys. What do you guys think? I think we all, I mean, back then on this show, we speculated what would be the cool Marvel Telltale game. What Marvel property would you like to see as a Telltale game? I think we may have brought up Guardians of the Galaxy, but for me, this seems a little more obvious than I was hoping for. I was hoping it would be a little obscure. Maybe I think I said the Runaways would be a cool thing, or, you know, something Power Pack or something wild. This seems pretty obvious. There's a new Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out. They want to capitalize on that. A little underwhelming for me, but Khalif, do you think this is a cool property to be a Telltale style game?
Yeah, I mean, anything that has a really large ensemble cast, I think, works really well in the Telltale system. You know, they already have a bunch of folks who are great voice actors who can bring those characters to life. I want Dave Bautista to really be his character in Marvel of the Galaxy. I want him to actually do the voice for it.
The best thing I saw this morning was a friend of the show, Ozzy Mejia, tweeted out a sample dialogue choice Press X for I am Groot. Press Y for I am Groot. Press A for I am Groot.
That would be amazing. But you know what? That would be awesome. You know, like it would be the crazy, really fun inside joke that's not an inside joke. But
right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great property to kind of poke at. Because there's a lot of avenues to go down. Imagine if you had a Rocket Raccoon single episode or something like that. You can break those out into smaller chunks and do individual pieces. And I can see that being really fun if they get it right. And it doesn't seem like there's a lot of room to get it wrong. So that would be cool. I'm down to play that.
Christian, you've been a little off of Telltale recently. What are your feelings?
Well, I think fans of the Tales of the Borderland Telltale game will think that this is perfect for them, right? They've shown that they can knock humor out of the park, and it doesn't all need to be the Walking Dead style moral choices. And I don't think I'll get in trouble for saying this, but I'm excited for people to play the episode I wrote, which I think will be a lot. No, I'm just kidding. How funny would that be if I just dropped it like that? I'm going to just keep putting it out into the world until they actually ask me to write one. So I think they can nail this. I think, I don't know if either of you are reading the current Black Panther comic, but when I started reading that, I was really hopeful that that's what it would be, because that is more of the, every decision that is made in that comic so far is one just like covered with agony.
Shades of gray.
Yeah. Mm. It's just like, no one in Wakanda can cut a break right now. Like, I'm not current. Like, I think maybe I'm two issues behind, but like, woof. They've been put through their paces with like internal strife and struggle and rebellion and everything going wrong when it should be going right. So I was hoping that it could maybe be that, but you know, they're going dark with Batman, and I could see them going back to humor with something like Guardian. So I hope they continue to tweak that new engine and the animation gets a little more fluid and the dialogue comes a little snappier. But I think it's a good property for them.
Cool. All right. Well,
also, episode 3, you guys. I can't wait till everybody plays.
The one you wrote? Yeah. Just, yeah, make it happen, man. The secret. All right. Let's move on now. But first, I do want to thank our sponsor, Casper. I've had a hard time sleeping this week. I don't know about you guys. But it's always nicer to sleep on something comfortable. It's going to be even harder to sleep. If you have an old mattress, if you have something you've had for several years, man, I was so stupid. I had the same mattress through college and into my post-college years. I didn't realize that you need to replace your mattress. And I would wake up with aches and pains and not understand why. And then I got a new mattress and, oh my goodness, it changes everything. You sleep better, you wake up more refreshed, and your body doesn't hurt. And Casper mattresses allow you to upgrade your mattress, to replace an old mattress, and do it without breaking your wallet, breaking your bank. And these are very high quality mattresses. These are premium, well-built, comfortable, and they're developed in-house. They have a sleek design. There's easy way to order them. You get online, you order it on their website at casper.com/DLC.
Is that a Chinese website or what are we talking about?
No, it's in whatever language you need it to be. it arrives at your house in a cool compact package, and it has like easy to unfold instructions. And within minutes, you can have this thing in your house ready to sleep on. And the best part is you have 100 nights to make sure you like it. No longer do you have to go to a store or a big warehouse and lay down on a mattress for 2 minutes and go, I think this is going to be good, and then take it home and 3 nights later go, oh, I didn't really like this after all, and I spent thousands of dollars on it. No, Casper changes all that. They give you 100 nights to make up your mind. If you should decide that Casper mattress is not for you in any part of that 100-night trial period, just let them know. They come, they pick it up, you don't have to worry about anything, and they give you your money back. It's pretty amazing. And these mattresses are well below industry standard prices. This is mattress because they've cut out the warehouse, they've cut out the middleman. Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $950 for a king. I mean, this is all under $1,000. You're not going to find that at a big warehouse store. It's convenient, it's easy, and they're comfortable. Plus, because you listen to this show, we're going to hook you up. Get $50 off any of your mattresses by going to casper.com/DLC and then use the promo code DLC at checkout. You'll save $50. You'll upgrade your sleep and you'll let them know you listen to our show, which helps us out. Casper.com/DLC. Use that promo code DLC.
I've heard that the Office of the Presidency is going to start offering that same 100-night guarantee.
Well, we can only hope. We can only hope.
Black Mamba preferred.
Here we go. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? You tell us on the playlist. Some big releases coming out, as usual, this time of year. We're going to be talking about Watch Dogs 2 next week, but the big release this week was Dishonored 2. All three of us have been playing it. Khalif, let's start with you. Did you like Dishonored 1? Were you a fan of that game? Did you play it?
I loved the gameplay in the first game and hated the ending. It made me so mad.
Several different endings.
I supposedly got the good ending.
Non-violent one? If you hated it.
I hated it, though. It's funny because I don't remember if I went back on YouTube to go look at the other endings to see if I got the proper, you know, good or proper bad ending. But the one ending I got, I didn't like it. It was poop. This game feels a lot like the last game in a lot of just the stealthy parts of you kind of crawling your way and jumping away and getting on rooftops and doing all that cool stuff, which makes you feel super badass and fun. I'm a big UI nerd. So like, I love the way that they've laid the menus out and kind of made it, this painterly style, a motif, which I think is really cool.
They broke that rule that says you're not allowed to use multiple fonts.
Yeah.
Screw it. We're using all the fonts.
Yeah. I was like, this is dope. I'm a big font nerd. So I'm like, ooh, they use really cool fonts. It's weird.
Yeah, that's the sum total of our review, guys. Good fonts. All right. Moving on. No, I'm just kidding.
Serifs all day. Serifs. But it feels really good. Like I'm getting back into the groove of kind of understanding how I can mess around with the mechanics. The interesting kind of one mechanic I love is the fact that when you go into Karnaca, which is the main city that you first kind of start into, there are these flies, these blood flies that are there. So it's like you go into the landscape and these parasites just kind of just show up whenever you kill something. And just getting to kind of step aside and move back once somebody has died, either from, you know, the world killing them or you just randomly doing something pretty cool, these things will just come out and they'll just show up. And then everyone has to like react to them and they do whatever they want. And you can just lay back and it's great. You can like figure out stuff and move around them and talk to people. The story so far is pretty chill. I think they add a lot of little tidbits here and there in places that do the kind of bad cardinal rule of giving you lore in places that you don't necessarily need to go search for them. It's kind of that Halo, you know, go to the places and go to these monasteries, or not monasteries, the little obelisks, and look up parts of the game. So they're doing a little bit of that. That's extra story. So it's hard to determine if that's like stuff that you need to know or stuff that's just additive to the story itself. So far, it feels good. They figured out how to make everything work the way they did the last game, which they didn't really have to make a lot of changes to. So I'm having fun with it so far.
Hope is that, the story itself seems pretty simple in terms of like the story you're presented with in those cool animated motion comic kind of cutscenes and then told throughout the game. So my hope is that story remains kind of straightforward, but mm-hmm. the world gets filled out with all this other stuff where you're like, oh, there's this cool thing going on, whatever. But if it ends up the opposite, like, the world of Destiny is so awesome, and I have never read about it. Right? I'm just like, not gonna happen. Who are you? Who are you playing as?
I'm playing as the female protagonist. I forget her name again.
Emily, right?
Emily.
She's awesome. I've always wanted to. Once I saw the first cutscene or the first full motion, not full motion. Geez, the CGI one that they did back at E3, I was like, ooh, that's the person I want to play as. I don't want to play as Corvo yet. Like, I think Corvo is probably cool. But she seems like she has like a couple of tricks up her sleeve that are more interesting to kind of check out.
Well, she's new and I'm sexy. Like, not sexy, like a, you know what I mean? Like, exciting. Yeah. Exciting. Yeah. You haven't played with her before.
Yeah, that's I'm playing as her too. It's like, I did a whole game as Corvo. Let's try something new.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you guys find it weird? Sorry, Jeff, this is the last time I'm sorry. Do you guys find it weird that she refers to her dad as Corvo? Is there a story? Maybe there's a spoiler later in the game, but she's like, Corvo taught me that. And I'm like, you mean your dad? It's your dad. Like, if my daughters were like, and Christian taught me that, I'd be like, I'm right here. I'm your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Call me dad or father.
That was a rule in my house. I couldn't call my grandma who raised me by her real name. She got mad at me.
Right? It's weird. Yeah. But I guess your grandma wasn't teaching you how to silently kill people from across a rooftop. So maybe.
Only with my eyes.
That's awesome. Christian, what are you thinking about the old Dishonored 2?
So I really enjoyed Dishonored 1. I never finished it. I never got to any ending. I don't remember exactly why. I think it was just kind of other games came out and it kind of, you know, fell off as I'm one to do with games. And so, not to bury the lead, this game is not clicking for me. Something about it for me playing right now is not clicking. And I think I can have... A couple of justifications I have for that, I think, are that I really enjoyed Battlefield 1, Titanfall 2, Call of Duty Infinite Warfare, so my headspace was just not in this style of game right now. Like, I came off of these three really, really well-made, bombastic, tight, focused single-player campaigns, and Dishonored 2 is like, you better go slow, dude. Oh, you died. You're going too fast. Slow down. The world is huge. Go explore. And I'm like, yeah, but like, zero gravity. Where are the robots? Let's go kill some stuff. And so it's my mind wasn't in that change of hadn't made that shift yet. And then also, I think it's unfortunate, but I can't deny the reality in which I'm living. Rainbow Six Siege, I had a hard time playing when it came out because of the realities of the world. And this might not be true for everyone or anyone else, but for me, I'm having a little bit of a hard time getting behind a narrative of a regime that has gone a certain direction too far in hopes of protecting its citizens. And that's just my personal beliefs and my issues and the baggage that I have, neither right nor wrong, but I'm having a hard time being emotionally invested in this story. All of that being said, I think there is a lot to like in this game. If you are a fan of the first game, I think you're going to love this game. I think it's incredible what they did going into an entirely new engine. The engine is 99% of the time beautiful. The mayhem that unfolds, like, I am just going, you know, guns to the wall. Like, I have a shrapnel mine laid out that, like, just slays four people. I teleport across the room, pull out my crossbow, take out another guy, switch over to a grenade, launch a regular grenade, then switch over and teleport back and take out my folding sword and just cut someone in half. I mean, insane. But there aren't enough of those moments for me that keep me compelled to keep playing. I just want to go back and play more Titanfall. Jeff, what about you?
Yeah, you know, I loved Dishonored. And for some reason, I'm on the same page with you. This game is not clicking for me. And I've been really trying to figure out why that is. As you said, I think the game looks great. I love the design of the world. This particular fictional place is so fascinating, and they've really blown it out this time and created a much more vibrant, interesting, deeper world, I think, with much more
more populated than Dishonored 1.
And more nooks and crannies. And the really cool thing, where you get that heart right at the beginning of the game, which is an accessory that you can select at any time, and you can squeeze the heart around people and it'll tell you their innermost thoughts.
Yeah.
And that's a really interesting way to flesh out and kind of create backstory for what are just, you know, basically cannon fodder. You know, like, every guard has a thought.
Literally cannon fodder the way I'm playing, guys.
Well, I think that's an interesting thing to bring up, because I think this game encourages, or for the way I'm playing it, I cannot get myself to just mow people down. And yeah, one of the things that I really raved about with regard to Dishonored 1 is that for someone like me that doesn't necessarily love stealth games all the time, Dishonored 1 always gave me tools when the S hits the F, you know, when things go wrong when things go wrong with a stealth thing, there were ways to get out of there. There were ways to reset. There were ways to either kill or hide myself. It really wasn't like, okay, game over, try that again. Which
is what Metal Gear 5 did so excellently, I think, also.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For some reason, I am not finding that to be the case with Dishonored 2. Now, it's probably along the lines of try sucking less, and that's, I totally can cop to that, that I'm maybe playing it in a very clumsy way. And I do think that the systems in the game, the mechanics of the game, are extraordinary. There are so many interesting ways to deal with problems, whether it's blocking and then timing your block perfectly correct so that you then can stun the enemy and grab them. There are new sliding mechanics you can take dudes down. All these cool ways that are in the game that I think are interesting, and perhaps if I was just more skilled, I wouldn't be finding this problem. But I find myself in a situation, and again, I'm a guy that is on record raving about console games that allow me to save anywhere. And this game allows me to save anywhere. I was like, yes, a stealth game allows me to save anywhere. I can take two steps and quick save. And it even allows me to like just pause the game, push a trigger, and quick save. That is so brilliant. Thank you. Thank you.
What are you playing on?
PS4.
PS4
Pro.
Okay.
Well, both, actually. I had it before I got my Pro, so I played it on both.
Okay, cool.
So the bad news about saving anywhere is that this game, at least on PS4, has deathly long load times. Like, excruciatingly long load
times.
That
is true.
For me, they're not Bloodborne pre-patch long, where it's like, I'm going to put this game away and not play it till they patch it. But it's, I'll get my phone out, check Twitter, and forget what I'm doing long. Somewhere, it's like long enough to be super annoying and not long enough to make me say, I'm not going to play it till they fix it.
And then it's like, you've loaded now, press the button.
Right. You've loaded now, press the button. I hate that because I'm looking down at Twitter and I look up and realize, oh my God, how long have I been sitting here when I could have gone back to play? I mean, it's the first world problems, right? But
these
are
issues.
But it's
extra frustrating for a game that is meant to reward multiple playthroughs, exploration, experimentation, and any time it made, that's what made me go just kill everyone, because you kind of told me that. And I was like, well, I'll see. And then I was like, okay. Game on, jerks.
and it's not just that I'm saving and loading a lot. I am saving and loading a lot. If I do something, if I tick off everyone and they all come and form this semicircle around me to fight me, I'm like, I just don't even deal with this load. So I am doing that, and that's on me. I get it. That's on me. I could probably figure out ways to deal with that. But I just am like, it's tedious. But also, this is not an open world game. This is a game where you walk into a place and it loads that place, and you click on a menu item and it says, are you sure you want to leave this place? Go to another place? Yes. Okay, we're going to load that place now. It feels clunky. All of that, those long load times, all of that stuff just kind of hurts the overall feel of the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that contributes to it a lot. I also have a gripe that may be, again, on me, not on the game perhaps, but there are a ton of little cool things to collect. Things that have actual meaning in your progress, things that upgrades that can help you right now, runes and bone charms that are scattered throughout the world. And I love that stuff. I love the, I'm going to spend an hour and just go collect as many runes as I can because I want, there's a carrot at the end of that stick. I want a new power. So if I just get 4 runes, I'll be able to upgrade that power. Well, here's the problem with that for me. I pull out my heart, and my screen is littered with icons.
And they're all 2 feet from you, but you can't get to any of them.
It's so unclear as to where the hell. Is it above me? Is it below me? Right. I don't know. It's so frustrating to me that I will spend 20 minutes getting to a thing because it was only 15 meters away. And I'm standing on top of it. And
the gate
like,
is locked. You need the gate.
It's not here.
I think there was one that I found and I was like, wait, do I have to transform into an animal to get this one? Like, can I actually go and get this? And nope, I couldn't get it. It was like behind a wall, through another door. I went to this one part where I was trying to get to one rune, and went into this other spot that was like not allowable to be going into. You like jumped through a window and got to this other spot, and there's all these blood flies around me, and it still wasn't there. Even when I got there, and it was like 2 feet.
Yeah.
It was like 2 meters away. I was like,
no, and it's not just those, dude. There are sequences in the game where the actual progress indicator icon, where it's like, go here and investigate that room. I went to the room and I walked around that stupid room for literally a half an hour before I realized, oh, I have to touch. There's like a thing in the corner that you have to touch that tells you the rest of the story. But the game has a bunch of things that you can touch for no reason. There's like, turn on the Bunsen burner. No reason for that.
Oh my God, that is the worst part of this game right now.
Spin this globe.
Yeah, spin the globe. So I'm wandering around, and I don't think the progress that I need to do is to do any of that crap. So I ignore it, looking for some way to trigger the game to continue. And it was one of those stupid things that just, in this particular case, wasn't a stupid thing. It was a vital thing. So
right now I want to play that. So you had a bad day, or whatever that song is for you, Jim. I will say, though, in that regard, I love the fact that the health that you pick up, not like the vials that give you like insta health, but you're not digging through garbage cans. Apparently this world is littered with like delicious fruit and cooked meats on plates, which is nice. Like not the spinning globe typewriter bull crap. Like, I don't know why that's there, but it, like the food, it's places where it should be. It's real food. It's not like, oh, I found this candy bar in a trash can under a pig's head. Now I have 10 health.
So these little frustrations, while they are all little straws, they just pile up and they break the camel's back. You know, for me, I got to a point where here's what happened. And I was only like 3 or 4 missions in, but at one point I booted up the game and I was like, I'm just going to tell myself to murder people and not care, like not try to be all stealthy, even though the game really makes you feel like a bad person for murdering people. And you know, you're like literally disrupting the more chaos. I'm like, I don't want to make chaos. There's enough chaos in the world. I don't need to make chaos. So I was like, just tell myself, just let it be fine. I'm just going to murder everybody. So you guys probably remember this mission. Tiny, tiny spoiler, but it's going to be non-specific. There's a mission where you go to the black market and the lady's like, there's a bad dude coming. You better hide. And I was like, okay. I'll hide, and I hid, and the bad dude and his 2 thugs stroll into the black market, and I was like, I upgraded my Linky Link spell. I'm so excited about my Linky Link spell. I upgraded it to be able to get 3 people, so I Linky Linked all 3 guys together. I walked up behind one, and I stabbed him in the back, killing all 3. Guess what happened? The main guy turns into a magic rat swarm and murders me instantly. And then I was just like, you know what? Screw you, game. I'm done.
Do you
I don't want
to
play you anymore.
Happened to me? They warned me about that, and then in my head, I went over to Apple Music, and I found Let the Bodies Hit the Floor, and I played that, and they walked in, and I sat there with a smile on my face and a gun in my hand, and before they said anything, I went click, click, boom. No transformation. The person behind me is like, he's transforming, and I was like, no, he's not, dude. And they were just laid to waste, and I walked out of there, and I was whistling, and then I threw a match behind my head, and it blew up, and I didn't even turn around to look. You know what I'm saying? I wrecked those fools.
I don't know, man. I wanted to love this game. I loved the first one. I think that, as you said, Christian, and as you said, Khalif, there are lots of things to like about this game. It's beautiful. It's got cool mechanics. And if it just sort of like found a groove with me, I think I would have gotten into that groove, but I could not find the groove. And there are so many other games that I want to be playing that I just couldn't justify spending more time with it.
How deep are you, Khalif? How far are you in the game?
I'm super early. I just went from the first town to the second town. So okay. I'm literally in the second part of that.
Someone on Twitter told me that I guess I finished chapter 4 or world 4, level 4, however they big chunk 4, I'll call it, before I decided like I can't anymore, but someone on Twitter reached out and said that level 7, chapter 7, whatever, does the thing I love in Titanfall 2 so much and does it better. And I was like, you jerk. Like, why are you telling me this after I said I'm done? I have 3 more levels to get there. But I mean, it's getting great reviews. People are loving it. I do feel like, you know, I think our criticisms of the game are fair, Jeff, but I do think to some extent it's on us, right?
I know. I tried to make that clear over and over as I was expressing my opinion too. And, you know, I knew that you and I, because we talked, I knew you and I were tepid on the game, and I'm glad Khalif likes it, but I wanted to make sure that there was another voice. We got an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com. This comes from Tim Z, right here in Southern California. Tim Z writes, I've been listening to DLC since the first episode, but never have I felt the need to write in until playing Dishonored 2. I loved the first game, and the sequel improves on what I loved in every single way. The world building, the environmental storytelling, the art design, all of it is taken to the next level, especially in the increased variety of lethal, non-lethal, stealthy, or not options. My favorite part of the game is going back and forth between lethal and non-lethal gameplay. The average, most likely poorly paid guard or soldier, though they may be a traitor or enemy, is just following orders. Or they are afraid for their safety of their family if they didn't go along with the coup. Or they have some more legitimate reason for their betrayal. These lower-level peons aren't worth blood on my hands. They're ignored or neutralized non-lethally. On the other hand, the higher-ups each have their reasons for betrayal or for the acts of evil they've committed. And through the story, dialogue, notes, I find this out. These motivations are revealed and paint a specific picture of whether or not they deserve to die for their sins at my hands, each on a case-by-case basis as I put the puzzle together and make my ultimate decision, lethal or non-lethal. The gameplay is so fun and engaging, but it is the game within the game that makes Dishonored 2 one of my favorite games ever. Just wanted to share why I'm loving this game. Love the show, Tim Z. Thanks, Tim. I'm really glad to have that perspective. And as I said, I love that heart mechanic where you can hear people, and I love the fact that you have found the groove and you are invested in this world and these people and can role play like that. It just didn't work for me. Mm. So, you know, that's Dishonored 2, I guess.
So can we talk about Titanfall 2? Are you loving it as much as Jeff and I love Titanfall 2?
I just finished the campaign the other night. It is so good. It's so good. They hit all the right notes. I actually cared about my robot friend. I didn't think BT. I was going to.
What a big, beautiful brute, right?
I didn't think I was going to care about him as much as I did. And I think they just played that. They paced that out really well. You know, you felt super powerful both in and out of your mech. And it just, the one thing that didn't make me laugh a lot was his little animation before he threw you.
Yeah. He calls like, a shot.
He's like, thumbs up, throw. That made me laugh a lot because they kept doing it. I was like, please give him another animation for that. But I think it was really, really well done. This has been a good year for first person shooter campaigns.
I think it's one been of a the lot. Best.
Yeah, it's insane. This is one of the best. Yeah, and the multiplayer is just top notch again. It's been interesting to play that and then go to play Call of Duty, and not be as excited, kind of getting into the groove on that. So I'm trying to like go back to that game because I played the first couple missions in Call of Duty and I was like, no, I can't do it. Like this is not clicking with me. Hmm. It just doesn't feel good in comparison to having come off Titanfall in Battlefield in that same way. So it's a good game. You should definitely be buying that and playing that because if you haven't checked out a really good campaign in a while, this is one for it.
I think it's super cheap now too. And again, I talked to one of the writers at the end of this episode, it's bonus content, but I think it's like $25, something like that, for like Black Friday deals.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy recommend. How deep are you in the multiplayer? Is that a scene that you're proficient in? I think I have an hour of it on my YouTube. It's like the last thing I streamed. And I had tons of fun. But mm-hmm. I mean, I was playing Bounty Hunt, and there were times I was banking zero.
You know what the funny thing is? I'm learning now because my teammates have told me how bad I play. I'm learning now that what you have to do to bank money in that mode, I think I'm like level 43 on my character currently. Dang. But it's like... you have to make sure that when they're doing the kind of drop ship with all the grunts that drop in, you have to be collecting those. Huh. It's not about killing other pilots and not killing other mechs. It's about the other Titans. It's about getting those first, banking that money off the beginning. And then, you know, I know people are going to be mad, but camping the banks. You got to camp those banks.
Oh, I know.
you got to camp those banks and you can kind of stop the other team from doing any work. But I've been playing a lot of that, the multiplayer, which is a thing that I haven't really gotten into in a while. I think my carpal tunnel is like, what's up, homie?
You're never getting a Nintendo Switch then. You've just admitted defeat at your F5 skills.
No, I told you I'm going to do it when they give me the little power glove or the power pad. If they give me a really small power pad.
Oh, you'll get the classic, yeah.
Yeah, I can do that move. But it has gotten me back into the space of feeling like I am competent in those spaces. Call of Duty, I can't play that anymore. Like I've literally had to give up because I'm just not fast enough to play other people who are younger than I am. But I'm about to say Dishonored multiplayer, Titanfall multiplayer definitely has like a really good move, a different groove in the way that you play it and the pace of it. So you can be really good on the pilot side and also on the Titan side, and then you can kind of just like decide what you really want to do with your team. You know, you can be a defender, you can be a person who's super aggressive, you can kind of lock down an area and do a lot of different things. So it's a lot of diversity in that game. It's a lot of fun.
I want to talk a little bit about the PlayStation 4 Pro. I mentioned that I got it this week, and we talked a little bit about it last week with Jeff Gerstmann. But I did get it. So excited, unwrapped it. I decided I was going to transfer all my stuff over from the old PS4, which they make really, really easy to do. You just, you know, hook your system up to the same wireless network or wired network, however you need to. Me, I'm wired all the way for my consoles. And the consoles kind of take care of the rest. I was like, oh, this is going to be great. I'm just going to transfer my games over. I'll be PS4 pro-ing. The transfer took 9 hours.
Well, how long does it take to work your way up from AA to the pros, Jeff? I mean, 9 hours seems like a really quick way to go pro from amateur.
Yeah, I guess. I guess I should count my blessings. That was a bit of a bummer. I did not anticipate that. I've been told that there's a whole Reddit thread about faster ways to do it, and I guess PS4 Pro has much improved download speed. So the Redditors have discovered that it's actually more efficient time-wise to delete all the games that you have on your hard drive on your PS4 and re-download them on PS4 Pro. It'll take less time. Unfortunately, I found that out after I was like an hour into the process, and there's no way to cancel. So you're just like, well, we're in for this. Here we go. So that was a bit of a bummer. But again, a one-time thing, and you never have to deal with that again. And as I said, they make it very easy to do it, which I really appreciate. It's not a bunch of hoops you have to jump through. As far as the performance of the PS4 Pro, I was complaining about load times with Dishonored 2. They are improved. It's not enough to actually completely mitigate that complaint, but I did notice that they are faster on PS4 Pro than they were on PS4. So that's something. And I anticipate that'll probably be the case with most games. They'll probably load a little faster. I have a 4K television. The games, I tested pretty much everything that I had that has an upgrade. Ratchet and Clank, Uncharted 4, they all just look stunning. They already look stunning, right? Those games are gorgeous on a 1080p television, no doubt. Uncharted 4 is jaw-dropping in 4K.
Is it? Oh, Jeff,
is it?
Come on.
Wait, but listen.
You're killing
me. Is it so jaw dropping? Like, it's the game's already stunning, right? It's like a +2 to jaw dropping.
Please say,
you know,
not,
I mean,
worth it. Please say not worth it. Please say not worth it.
Here's where I think it made the biggest difference for me.
Oh no.
PSVR.
Oh, son of a.
Oh no.
It is a massive upgrade for PSVR, in my opinion.
Oh, Jeff,
man.
Dang it.
really breaking some hearts today.
Oh, my heart, my wallet, my marriage. Sweet Jesus.
It is, yeah. I mean, it's a palpable improvement in how crisp the image looks, how smooth the image moves. I picked out the game that I find to be one of the ugliest in PSVR so far, which is Rush of Blood, the Until Dawn game. I think that game is really kind of a cool game, but it's kind of ugly when you first boot it up. It looks a lot better. I mean, a lot better in PSVR.
Oh, man.
Thumper is at a resolution that's just sick. Like, there's no... It's what you want VR to be. You don't see...
Well, wait, the resolution, your screen is limited though, right?
But like, super sampling, dude. The games that can super sample, they do it. Like,
is that
Thumper,
a radioactive spider or is that gamma rays?
So super sampling, what that is a very big part of the VR scene right now. And that is where the game actually renders at a much higher resolution than the headset can display and then downsamples when it projects it onto the screen. Huh. So what you're getting, it renders it at such a high resolution that it smooths the edges out when it's displayed on a lower resolution. I don't know why. I don't know how that works, but it is palpable. You can do it on Vive now, and I think there's a couple of Oculus games that let you do it. But the Vive, there's been a hack for months that the community found where you could literally just hack the any file of the Vive software and – you know, manually change your super sampling rate, and it is murder on your system. It requires a really beefy computer to be able to push it up, even just it's like dot percentage of super sampling, right? You like go from 1.5 to 1.7, and it's like this massive hit on your system. But it makes a dramatic impression, a dramatic improvement, I'm telling you. And PS4 Pro is doing some of that on these games that are able to do it. PlayStation Worlds and the you know, the demo disc where you have all the different the platforming games and stuff. I mean, it's just it's a huge improvement. It really, really is. So
may I ask a question?
Yeah.
So I had heard from my, you know, I read about things on the internet so that I don't buy them. And I'm like, well, this will satisfy the itch. I've heard that the biggest complaint, though, for VR or non-VR, is that you don't kind of know if it's doing anything. Like, you don't.
Yeah.
The games don't get, like, maybe a game gives you an option, but another game just is like, it's better. And you're like, is it?
Yeah. No, no, you're absolutely right. I went from playing Dishonored 2 on PS4 to playing Dishonored 2 on PS4 Pro. And other than the load times, I could not tell a difference. And I was really excited. I was like, oh, Dishonored 2, it looks exactly the same. And I was playing it minutes, but well, not minutes, 9 hours. I was playing it was a 9 hour difference. But it was like, as close to back to back as I could get it.
literally but, seconds after, 9 hours and seconds after.
A time zone away.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I'm talking about, where I know in my head that Uncharted 4 looks better. It's stunning. Uncharted 4 is stunning on a 4K television on PS4 Pro. But we all know that the game was already stunning. You know, yeah. Like, it's not – I don't know. I find it hard to recommend just from a – I have a 4K television standpoint – I'm really excited because I got a bigger hard drive. I mean, I had the launch PS4, right? So I got a bigger hard drive. I got faster load times. I think the games that are coming down the pipeline are probably going to take advantage of it more than the games that were patched to take advantage of it.
Yeah, I'll be playing Horizon Zero Dawn at your house. I'll be like, I'll babysit your kid for an hour and now just get out. Get out.
Yeah.
Do you think it's making any real differences for the folks who are not on the 4K train yet? Besides the low time stuff, because I'm in that boat. I'm on the GameStop website right now.
Yeah, I have a 480p CRT. Is that going to help me or not?
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Like, that's not my test condition, right? I don't have a non-4K television. Does that sound stupid?
No. It's great. It's like, I don't know.
I don't waste my time with non-4K television. No, that's not what I mean at all. I will say this. I think the games are going to be better going forward. I don't know if it's I wouldn't classify it as a must buy, mm-hmm. but it is. I'm glad I got it. I really am. I think it's. What was the question exactly? On a 1080p television?
Yeah.
What I was going to say.
Go ahead,
I wish, as you said, Christian, I kind of wish there were more games where you would go into the options and click it on or click it off or click or select, like, I want a higher frame rate or I want to, you know, I wish it gave you some sort of sense of what you were getting out of the deal, because it's a little easy. Ratchet and Clank was one where the game just decides that you're on PS4 Pro. So it decides whether you're on a 4K TV or not. So it does everything for you. And the game looked great. I mean, amazing. But it always looked amazing,
yeah.
And it's that thing we talk about a lot, where it's like your memory betrays you, and it says, "Well, this game always looked awesome, so it always looked like this," you know.
Oh man, that PSVR bit. Oh man,
it makes a big difference. It really does. I reloaded Batman up. I reloaded. All the games that I had, I was like, it looks way better. It really does.
Robinson, the Journey. Is that out?
It is. I have it. I'll be talking about it next week. I didn't get a chance to play it much, but
I've heard that game looks like that's one that I've seen, like, people trying to do screenshots, which is hard to do. That's the other problem with this, right? And I think we talked about this with Gertzman too, where it's like, I can't look at this on my phone and go, yeah, there is a difference, because there's no difference.
Like, yeah.
I mean, there is, but it's hard to convey, especially now in a VR helmet, because what you see on screen isn't what you see in helmet anyway. So that messaging is tough, man.
All right, well, speaking of VR, let's talk about some VR in our usual VR segment right now. Virtual reality. VR. Virtual reality. Just VR. We've all been playing some VR. Khalif, you have a PSVR, as your impulse buy was indicating.
I'm still with my wife. She still loves me.
Oh, that's a wonderful, magical thing. Me too.
I was like, she was like, what's this new thing in the house? I was like, it's a helmet for another world. We can all be in it.
Yeah. Dude, I got a text message last night from my mother-in-law. And listeners of the show will remember I talked about how I put her through the PSVR when it came out. I got a text from her last night saying, hey, if I wanted to buy VR for my husband for Christmas, what do I do?
Wow.
And I was like, well, because they don't have any console, right? I was like, well, it's going to run you about $1,000 all in for PlayStation VR. That's the least expensive way to do it because they don't have, you know, Samsung, whatever. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to tell them to get gear. And she goes, oh, too expensive. Okay, thanks anyway. And I was like, well, that's kind of where we are right now. That's kind of where we are.
But that's the cheapest way to get in.
Yeah, and I was encouraged that she was at least interested, you know. But
no, that's a I when you heard that, I was like, that's a win, you know, like that's a win for the space when you can say, you know, someone's had that experience and then they can ask someone who else who already knows and they're like, hey, I want that. Can I get in on that? We had one of those one of those kinds of things at the house. We had a whole bunch of people come over, and I was like, it's gonna be VR night. We're all gonna play some VR stuff, and you know, we're all gonna check it out and try it out because folks were excited, and we played Rush of Blood. And I love the fact that on PSVR, you can record the experiences that are coming out of the helmet directly to your hard drive. So I did like, I have to put it together because I haven't done it yet. So this files was still on my hard drive. But I like took my phone, captured people from my phone while they were playing, and then captured the gameplay on the other end. So I'm going to try to match those together and sync it so that people can see what they looked like when they were playing in VR.
Amazing.
And they were freaking out. It was so good. It was so good. So I've been playing a little bit of Rush of Blood. It feels great. You know, it definitely does what it's supposed to do in the respect of like giving you those jump scares that you want. I'm excited for that. I haven't played the kitchen demo yet in VR, which I'm dying to play. Because it was only on the European store, so I downloaded that. Ooh. and I'm hopefully going to get some time in with that. Thumper, I have been playing for any time I was able to go to a conference and get a chance to play some Thumper. I was doing that, and then when I got it home, I'm still loving the heck out of that game. They have done something with the inertia of that game that is something that you don't really get in most VR spaces. I think Riggs is trying to go for that, but it doesn't feel as good. It's kind of disorienting in a lot of ways. But so Thumper feeds the speed and the score thing that I have for myself, where it's like, oh, I need to keep going. Oh, I know somebody in my friends list who did better than I am. Oh, I'm going to be here for another half an hour trying to get this thing done. But Headmaster is my VR game. Like, that's the one that I am rocking the most.
That is so funny because that game seems dumb. I mean, it seems dumb.
I love that game. I love Headmaster. I mean, the things I love about it is it feels more skill-based than a lot of people would expect. Mm-hmm. It does take advantage of you having to like kind of remember exactly where your body placement is. And PSVR has some sync issues from time to time. It depends on a lot of different factors, you know, lighting in your house and stuff just being in the way and all that stuff. But that game makes me feel like when I've gotten things right, both in my mind and body, it sounds very, very zen-like, that I'm actually doing something very specific and nuanced and interesting in a space that I didn't expect. So it's like if I'm trying to head a soccer ball into the upper left corner of the net and I figure out what that motion is, it's one, it's hard to replicate once you get it right, which feels good because then you get to learn from it. Hmm. And then two, the kind of cheeky humor that they've put into the game makes it feel like something different in that space where, you know, you feel like you're in this enclosed place. You feel like when you look around, you are this prisoner in this soccer internment camp, which is an interesting concept in and of itself. But it gives me the feeling like I'm doing something different that I didn't expect to have and haven't had yet in a lot of other games yet. Like the Eve game feels good, but it doesn't feel like the Starfighter that I want it to feel like yet. Mm. Maybe that's a resolution thing. Maybe that's I'm not feeling like I'm moving around enough. But Headmaster so far is my PlayStation VR game that I'm like digging on super hard.
I guess I got to give that game a chance because I looked at that and I was like, well, this is that Wii level of interaction that everybody was afraid of for VR. And I kind of wrote it off, I think, unfairly. I got to give that game a shot.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
Christian, are you doing any VR stuff?
I am, but nothing new. It's the same stuff that I've been doing. I have not purchased any new games. Robinson's Journey interests me, but I read online that a few people got very sick playing it, so I'm waiting until you play it or I go to your house. You know, fool me once, shame on me kind of thing. But the games I'm playing, I still love, and I'm looking forward to some of the new experiences that are coming down the pipe for sure.
Well, speaking of games that I've talked about before, but I'm still playing, I'm still loving Abduction in VR. I'm playing it on Oculus, and I'm playing it with a controller. I'm playing it full free movement. For some reason, it doesn't bother me. When I talked about it last week and was raving about it, I hadn't even gotten out of the first major area yet, which is big. It's a big area. This is a game that's from the creators of Myst and Riven, so it's very much a puzzle game. There's no action to be had. It's all very slow, very methodical, figure out stuff, figure it out. How do I get over there? How do I flip that lever? Why is the power not on? How do I make things work? And I have now gotten to some wildly different areas, and it made me fall in love with this game even more. All the time that I was playing Dishonored 2, I was like, I just want to be playing Abduction right now. I haven't looked at any online help cheat fact things. I'm just in VR, looking around, observing things, and thinking about how does this all, how, what can I do? Where can I go? How can I figure it out? And it's slow. It's taking me probably much longer than it should. But because I'm in that world, I'm just looking around and seeing stuff, I'm loving it. I have more patience because everything's around me and I'm just sort of fiddling with things. And the cool thing about that game, and really games like it, is the reward for doing something right, for figuring something out, is what you get to see next. Like there's no... Yeah, I don't know. There's no story beat or climactic explosion or anything. You just get to see the next place. There was, something you saw over the hill and you wanted to get there, and now you're there and it's full of wonder and mystery. And that is the reward of these kinds of puzzle games, right? Witness was like that. Like, get beyond the door. What's beyond the door? Now you get to see what's beyond the door. And to do that inside a VR world is even more exciting because it feels like you're there. It feels like you actually got to go to that new place. I'm loving Abduction. It's so cool.
I'm surprised no one has made a Portal game yet.
They have actually. There is a on Vive. There is a fan made Portal VR experience.
Ooh.
It's just a mod that they created from the Source engine. It's very short. It's cool, but it is not what we all want, which is like this real Portal game. I mean, you use portals and you do stuff, but it is, and you're in, you know, the Portal world, and there's VO happening. I mean, it's doing its best to replicate that experience as much as possible, but it's very short and the puzzles are very simple. And it's like, it's just a tease for like an official Valve Portal VR game.
Got it.
A couple of other things I want to talk about because I realize I haven't talked about them before. A Vive game called Accounting. Have you guys heard about this?
No.
Ben Affleck?
It's not The Accountant. It's Accounting. This is made by Dan Harmon, and I think Dan Harmon's involved. It's the Rick and Morty team. It might be one of the best. It's just insane. I can't even describe it to you guys. All I can tell you is, everybody that has a Vive has to download it. It's free. You can get it. If you haven't played it, it's one of the funniest games I've ever played. It's one of the most nutball, wild things. You're in VR. That you go to this. You start in this office where you're an accountant, and then things just go bat-ass insane. It's nuts. There are little characters yelling at you. You'll find yourself in like crazy cartoon court at one point. It is. Craziness and hilarious. And I texted my friend who has a Vive after I played it, and I said, whatever you're doing right now, stop doing it and download Accounting and play through it. It only takes about an hour to play through the whole thing, and it's a delight. It's insane.
He got fired from his job for that, but like,
yeah, you know, he was actually saving lives.
He's in the middle of open heart surgery. I need someone to assist. Close him up. We're done. I got to get home.
I just got a text from Jeff.
Oh, William Pugh is on this game. I didn't know that. He's the designer behind Stanley Parable. It's sold.
Yeah.
Sold.
I'm hearing from the chat room, Sam, I can't pronounce that. Anyway, he says Stan Harmon isn't involved. It's just Justin Roiland and one of the designers of Stanley Parable. Okay, fair enough. I should have checked that before talking. But still, Justin Roiland is awesome, and the game is insane.
Oh, it's the Dan Harmon game, right?
Yeah. He's involved. And then the other game that I want to talk about, I got a pre-alpha access to a game called Soul Keeper VR. This is made by a small team, and it is a vision of the future, guys. This is what...
Oh, was it Wireless 5 or what are we talking about?
No, it's what VR software is going to be in the next year to two. What we are doing now, what we have right now, is just a prelude. And this is, again, pre-alpha, very short experience right now. But it's Unreal Engine on Vive, role-playing game, first-person, full room scale, casting spells, fighting with swords. But it looks as good as any video game you want to play right now, if not better. It is stunning. There are dragons. You are fighting. It's a glimpse of what the future holds for VR. It is my dream come true, and just a tiny morsel, tiny taste of what we're in store for. You know, as good as any video game looks right now, but you're there and you're doing the stuff. So, keep your eye out for Soul Keeper VR, guys. I'll be talking about it a lot more as it moves into open beta on Steam. But what I saw right now, I can't even express to you how excited it made me. It is awesome. Okay, so that's the VR segment. We're going to skip tabletop time this week because we're running a little long already.
Some might say we're going to table it.
Hey-o,
it's table. I've been waiting so long for that. You don't even know.
Table time. I do want to just mention USC McLeod brought up the fact that we talked about the Toy Hall of Fame. D&D made it. D&D made it into the Toy Hall of Fame. We talked about that a while back. And also, I guess, the swing. Oh, I forgot to read this email. Guys, we got a VR email. We're not out of VR talk yet.
Nice.
Nick Strauss-Klein sent us this email. He said, "Ever since I wrapped my mind around the concept of mature VR tech a few years ago, I've been on Jeff's VR hype train. I'm not a PC gamer, so I've been waiting impatiently all year for PSVR, vicariously getting my VR jollies up until last month through your descriptions of Vive and Oculus fun. I got a PSVR bundle on launch day, and I was initially a little let down by the low-res graphics and how finicky the first-gen tech can be. But the immersiveness is worth it. It's all that I had imagined and more, and I'm hooked. Until a month ago, gameplay and narrative were everything to me. But in VR, I'm finding I judge games instead on presence and experience, on how I feel about the places I go in VR, on what kinds of images of space and movement linger with me after my time in VR. So I wanted to thank you for your enthusiasm and coverage of VR, and make sure you and your listeners know about my favorite PSVR game so far, which isn't getting much coverage. It's called Windlands. I made note of Jeff's excitement about it on Vive back in the spring, and the PSVR version is amazing. It's like being in first person inside of Super Mario 64, except you're friggin' Spider-Man! And it has the awesome level-up mechanic that so few games dare to use. The only thing that improves your abilities as you play is you, your own skill and imagination. It's a three-button game with absolutely no power-ups and no hand-holding, and the first time I looked at a ledge 30 feet above me and a grapple point 10 feet below me and realized I had to turn around, back off a cliff. Hours into this game, I still have to overcome my own self-preservation instincts to do this in VR, look up as I'm falling, and watch the grapple point fade into the distance while fighting the urge to grab it, then fire my hook at the last possible moment in order to slingshot myself nearly straight up into the air past the grapple point and fly in a huge parabolic arc up onto the ledge. Well, it blew my mind in a way that nothing has since Portal 2, but far more viscerally than that. The sense of momentum and flying is an incredible quasi-physical experience for me. Maybe I'm lucky, but it doesn't give me motion sickness. It's more like the physical thrill after a good roller coaster. And when I need a little break, I stand on an impossibly high tower and gaze around at the beautiful, bright, sun-drenched vistas. Every time I boot up Windlands, I discover I've leveled up. I think of new ways to launch myself into the swirling, or excuse me, into the swinging, platforming, and exploration challenges. Thanks, guys. Nick Strauss-Klein. What an awesome email. And I couldn't describe it any better than that. That game is really cool. I haven't played it on PSVR, but I did play it on Vive, and I concur. These games are really, really cool in delivering that feeling of being friggin' Spider-Man.
Nice.
Either of you guys tried that one?
I have not.
Not yet.
I think it's a very inexpensive one. I think it's like $10 or something, but I could be wrong. All right. So we don't have tabletop time. So that's going to do it for this episode, you guys. We do have a parting gift coming up. And Christian has bonus content for you where he talked to the writer of Titanfall 2.
One of the writers, yeah, Manny Hagopian. And he started on Titanfall 1.
We talked about the other writer, bit. I believe, is Dan Harmon.
I mean, honestly, probably. That guy has his fingers in everything. But it's really cool. I got some questions beforehand from Twitter that I kind of wove into the interview, and then I asked a couple at the end. But hopefully you guys dig it.
So stick around for that at the end of the show. But I do need to thank Khalif Adams for being here, buddy. Thank you so much.
Guys, thank you so much for having me on. It's always super dope to hang out with you folks and talk to the rest of the crew. Thanks so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. It's always great having you. Where can people keep up with your stuff?
You can check us out at spawnon.me, on iTunes, on NPR One. We're doing a show every Tuesday, and you can come check out the latest one that has Zoe Quinn dropping on tomorrow, I think, on Tuesday.
Awesome. Really dig that show. You guys should definitely check it out. Christian, how about you? What do you got going on this week?
Well, if you're in San Diego or near San Diego and listening to this live or the day it drops on RSS and iTunes, I am recording my second stand-up album Tuesday, November 15th at Lestat's in San Diego, which is 3343 Adams Avenue. It's a free show, starts at 9 p.m. Get there early for seats. It's all ages. I do swear in the content, but, you know, like high school kids or whatever, right? It's all ages. I'd love to see you there. I know a couple people. I'm excited to meet some internet friends that I'll get to meet in real life. So that's fun and exciting. And then I have a Patreon going. It's right now for a podcast, at least 20 more minutes, where I dive into something geek-centric, and spend more time on it, focus on it. Last week's episode was all about the shooters of 2016. And as we talked about on this episode, it's maybe the best year ever for first-person shooters. But a pre-end-of-the-year... Before the year's even over, I rank them and I dive into them and kind of give my explanations for my thoughts and feelings behind the shooters of this year. This coming week's episode, which will come out tomorrow, Tuesday, is about adult science fiction. It's inspired by a movie I won't mention yet. but that's what this week's episode is going to be about. It's at patreon.com/Christian Spicer. Then I have a parenting podcast called Department of Parenting. You can find it wherever you find your podcasts of choice. And Twitter at Spicer. Mr. Cannata, what about you?
Got several other shows for you to check out, including the Slash Filmcast. We did a review of Arrival, which I'll be talking about shortly. And it's a pretty good episode. We also talked a lot of politics in that episode. We spent about an hour at the top of the show working through our feelings this week. And we've been getting some amazing feedback about that. So if you want to hear me talk a little more about that stuff, I urge you to check out that episode. Some really great things. And I also do a comedy science podcast called We Have Concerns, which you can find at wehaveconcerns.com. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode. Let us go right now to our parting gift. Hey, give us a suggestion. Khalif, it's been quite a long week, and I'm sure next week will be quite long as well as we all make it through. You got any things to help people get through their week?
If you need a pick-me-up for the rest of your life, The new Tribe Called Quest album just came out. It just dropped a couple of days ago. It is getting me through in a way that I did not expect. If you love old school hip hop with a little bit of new school to it, the new Tribe album, Rest in Peace Fife as well, is something you definitely need to have in your rotation. It's so good. So good.
Oh, I love old Tribe. But I have completely dropped off the face of the planet. Annoying. Have they been coming out with albums, or is
no?
This,
yeah, this is the only one that they've dropped in years.
Same crew, same team, same lineup.
Same group. Fife unfortunately passed right. a couple months ago, I believe. But he's on the album. Wow. In his parts that they recorded before his passing, and it's melded a lot of both political conversation and stuff that's always been in their music, but has still kept its old funky vibe with a little bit of new stuff in it too. So it's a little bit of Tribe, a little bit of Roots, it's a little bit of Common in there. It's a lot of good bits in there. So definitely check that out and pick that up.
Awesome. Christian, how about you? You got a parting gift?
I do. I mentioned it at the beginning, and if you haven't done it, you can do it right now, and I'd recommend doing it right now, because if you listen to NPR, they say, hey, you know, help support us, and you're like, yeah, 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 and then you don't, because you're driving. Find a charity that you support, set up, it can be a small amount of dollar, make it a recurring payment, though, so that you're doing it even when you're not thinking about it, and I'm not going to tell you what charity to support. I will only recommend one. There are several. Sierra Club is one I will recommend, but that is just my personal opinion. If you want more, I'm happy to recommend them to you personally. You can reach out to me. And also work on the micro level to giving back to your community. And the one suggestion I will make there is find a food pantry in your neighborhood that you want to support. And if you have kids, a great way to get involved is when you go to the grocery store, have the list of the things that your local food pantry is looking for, and get them involved in picking it out, because nothing makes the world a better place than getting youngsters involved and making it part of their daily routine, that giving back and volunteering is just how we live. It is what we do. It is part of who we are, and it's part of our week, just like waking up and going to the bathroom before we go to bed. Those are all things we need to do to contribute to society. And so the one local micro recommendation I would make would be donating to your local food pantry whenever you can.
Not to take anything away from that, but using the word youngster makes you an old guy.
Today's my birthday, Jeff.
And said, yeah.
And still, youngster. You're still older than me somehow. So
you said youngster. Like you're a youngster.
Actually, it's someone that's from Youngstown, Ohio, is called a youngster. I was talking specifically to my friends in Ohio.
I probably don't need to tell you to see this, but go see Arrival. It's my favorite movie of the year. It is stunning and smart and incredible. If you have the ability to avoid all trailers at this point, I would recommend it highly. Let that movie be a surprise. Again, you can hear me talk about it on the Slash Filmcast if you want in detail, but all you need to know is it's worth your dollar. Get out there, see it. I saw it the day after the election, and it just made everything better. It's an amazing movie. All right, I do have a listener suggestion for a parting gift. This comes from Raphael from Chicago. He says, I don't remember if either of you have recommended this book. It's called The Girl with All of the Gifts by M.R. Carey. It's a post-apocalyptic story with zombie-like entities called the Hungry. The main perspective is through a little girl that is a second-generation Hungry that has the ability to learn. I listened to this on Audible, and the narrator, Finty Williams, does a great job. I know the movie came out in some festivals, and I'm still looking forward to seeing it. So there you go, guys. From this listener, I have not read this, but it's called The Girl with All the Gifts by M.R. Carey.
And that girl is busy. I mean, she got a dragon tattoo. She was on a train.
Mm. Oh, man, that girl. again, stay tuned for Titanfall 2 bonus content, but that's it for this episode. I got to thank Leith Adams and Christian Spicer for hanging out with me. Got to thank our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star. I got to thank all of you for hanging out in the chat room that have been here all episode. We really appreciate your input live as we record, and all of you that have downloaded the show. We very much appreciate it. It's a privilege to speak to you every week, and we do not take that lightly. And more than ever, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.
everybody. Welcome to bonus content of DLC. I am here with Manny Hagopian, one of the writers of Titanfall 2. How would you label your title as writer of Titanfall 2, Manny?
Let's see. I was originally brought on for Titanfall 1, actually. So I was an assistant writer for Titanfall 1, where I basically wrote all of the all the background chatter. So every grunt and every line that you hear that isn't part of the quote-unquote cutscenes, I wrote. So I was labeled assistant writer for that, and then brought on for Titanfall 2, where I am. I guess the idea is production dialogue writer, but that's just turned out to be just writer.
So what does that mean? What changed between Titanfall 1 and Titanfall 2?
Oh, a lot. We got a single player campaign, so pretty right. much my job quadrupled.
Yeah, and then for people that don't know you, you're very active in the LA comedy scene and improv scene. And then was it something that when you started writing for Titanfall 1 or kind of exploring the idea of games writing, was that something that had been a goal for you or something that kind of fell into your lap and you were like, here we go, I'll come up with 100 creative ways to write. Let's go get down over here. Get out of here.
It definitely was not a goal when I moved out here. I wanted to be a writer and I got into comedy and I found myself after a short time working out here and whatever jobs you could find. I was working on a show for Animal Planet for a little bit, and I managed to get a job with a guy named Jesse Stern, and I was his assistant. Jesse Stern is a writer for – he was a writer for NCIS for a very long time. He's also – writes video games. He wrote Call of Duty Modern Warfare, Modern Warfare 2. He worked on some Battlefield games and with me for Titanfall and Titanfall 2. So Jesse was basically the one who brought me on board for when Titanfall got announced that it basically swept at E3. Jesse was brought in to help sort of shape the story and brought me along to assist. Which ended up, Steve ended up giving me all this background chatter work to do. And I said, I'm going to do as much as I can because they're giving me this opportunity to write and I came out to write. So, I just went at it and, I went on a different approach and I basically went, and this was one of the coolest, directions Jesse gave me was, thinking of these grunts as the sort of turn of Titanfall. So it was like writing for characters who sort of have an idea what's happening, but it's more skeptical. So it turned into more comedy based. And I guess that's what people really latched onto was the comedy. Cause a lot of people after the game came out, there was a lot of, attention and someone made like a bunch of videos that was like called Shit My Grunt Says, and Kotaku did like a whole article on called Hanging With My Grunts and stuff like that. So I think people just really liked the direction of making them fun and realistic and also building the lore of the world. You can learn a lot just by hanging out with grunts.
Yeah, that. So backing up a little bit, when you mentioned Steve, that's Steve Fukuda, who was the lead writer or head writer of Titanfall and Titanfall 2 and did some of the first early press where if people listening, you know, read about the idea of Titanfall 2 kind of put out into the world, we're going to make it a little more real, a little gritty. We're going to ground these characters. That was Steve that was out there championing that. And also I would add that Steve and Jesse, I mean, bringing you in, that had to feel good because it's kind of, those are some heavy hitters. It's not like, oh, a buddy of mine from college was like, let's make a video game. And you were like, cool, I guess so. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was like you're drafted into the majors from the get-go.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't think of it like that until afterwards because I mostly thought of it as I finally get to do some writing and I wasn't much of a gamer per se at the beginning. So I didn't quite know how big it actually was until it was just do this work and I just busted my ass doing this work and it was a good amount of work and I was not hired by Respawn at the time. I was not necessarily like it wasn't really a job. I was doing it because Jesse gave me the opportunity and I didn't want to let him down. So I did as much as I could, and he really helped me expand on that writing style and learn how it is to be in a video game.
Yeah, which I have to imagine is very different than writing a traditional half-hour comedy or hour drama or feature length. Could you talk a little bit about those differences and maybe the challenges, or maybe how it was a little easier to write for a video game than kind of sitting down to write a sketch or something more traditional?
I wouldn't say easier. It's quite the opposite. It's just a backwards way of thinking. And each, you know, video game company, everyone who makes their own games, they have their own unique way of developing a story. And I don't think there is a right way to do it. But the biggest thing, and what I learned from Jesse and Steve, is that in video games, gameplay is more important. And people who play the games want to play the gameplay. They don't play the game necessarily for the story, at least when it comes to first-person shooters. So gameplay mechanics are so important, and the level design is so important, and the story is sort of – it's important if it's, it needs to be there, but it's not – it doesn't need to be spoon-fed to you. It doesn't need to be right in – like these cutscenes that are in a lot of games are – or tend to be more boring than, at least for me, more boring than entertainment. If I'm playing a game, I want to play the game. I don't want to watch a movie. And that's maybe my personal preference. But so that makes it challenging. It makes it difficult because we can't tell a story when the person who is watching, it's like making a movie, and someone who's watching the movie is running around the theater, not even paying attention to the movie at all. So how do we get them to pay attention? It's like extremely difficult. And then on top of it, the levels are sometimes the levels are designed before the story. So we'll have really cool ideas for levels, and we'll have to find a way to make it fit into the story. So making this, it's like making a set piece for a play and saying, you know, fit this whole thing into this story, into this theater.
Yeah.
Deal. Whatever.
I mean, I can only imagine. I remember some of the early chatter that came out about Titanfall 2 was, you know, for the single player, we designed these really cool moments. And what basically we tasked our designers with was go make something awesome. Mm-hmm. And then we'll make the game out of
it. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think that's accurate, but also maybe does a little discredit to then to what you guys were able to put together, because it certainly builds and is currently constantly adding new things and having you do one cool moment after another, but it doesn't feel as disconnected as something like the current Battlefield, where it's totally just, hey, here are six stories. They're in no way connected, but flying that plane sure was cool. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys found a way to string this together after you introduce time travel for a little bit.
That was fun.
Yeah. And I think, so like talking about, you mentioned like writing the story and how do you get someone to pay attention. For me, as someone who likes story and appreciates it in games, I mean, it was that level effects and cause where not only did the gameplay, you know, get turned up to 11, but also I found the way the story was presented was so interesting. And I'm curious, you know, if that was on the writer's side or kind of coming in with the idea of time travel, because basically I felt like you guys found a way to tell essentially flashback exposition, but in a way that was super compelling because you're kind of like, what's happening? And so I'm listening to people when otherwise it would just be a boring flashback cutscene.
Mm-hmm. That level everyone was excited about. I mean, and I'm not going to belittle the other levels. I mean, every level in Titanfall 2 is exciting and unique and different enough. What made, besides the time travel aspect being like cool shit, the level itself is a bit more slow paced than the mm-hmm. others. In the first three levels, it's a bit of you're constantly doing stuff. You're running around. You're getting chased. There's a lot of combat. Finally, we get a chance to settle down, and we're also at this place that we've been sort of talking about of wanting to meet with Anderson. So we have our explore time. So that gave us this, you know, moment we can explore the story a little bit more. when so your question was, how did we get what made us choose to put the exposition in that sort of unique way? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Sort of came about organically. I mean, we knew we wanted to go into this sort of amphitheater or lecture hall and see this guy like giving his speech. And that just felt like a simple, like it just sort of wrote itself. As for the little Anderson logs that are found throughout the level, those were a bit more challenging because they were an idea we had to develop, like me, Steve, Mackie, lead designer, and Jake, who's the designer of the level, like, and a bunch of other people. Like, we're just figuring out how we can get this story across and how we can learn more from Anderson and what would be the best way. And eventually we came up with this idea of these sort of logs that you get to visually see. And Mackie was one of those who was like, we need to see it. Like, we can actually see Anderson and see what he's doing in both time periods, regardless of the time period. We'll be able to actually see what he's talking about in that visual connection and that audio connection. It automatically will make the player seem a little more interested and sort of forces them to listen to a bit of a story without being without stopping their mobility. They are still running around. They can still do whatever they want. They can still time shift if they need to. It's not really putting a halt to that. So it all organically came about, and then a lot of just figuring out the easiest way to sort of express this story. But man, that was a fun level to work on.
Yeah, I'm curious, if I had a time shift wristwatch and I were to go back in time, who do I kill out of you guys for having me break my device at the end of that level? Because I was having some fun.
Yeah, I mean, that sort of was like, you know, this is, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a designer, so I don't really, I'm not able to go into it. But all I know is that level itself is just, it's heavy. It's a lot of, there's a lot in there, a lot of design in there. That for it to be a whole game, I mean, you're going to want to, it may just take up too much space. I don't know, but
when we were emailing, I was, you know, singing the praises of this game, and I will continue to, for people that don't know or haven't, you know, listened to when Jeff and I sang the praises on other episodes of DLC. But I feel like as I finished that level and my time shift device was broken, I was like, okay, Titanfall 2, you better keep this up somehow. And it did. Like, it's not as if you do that and then all game you're just hoping you find another time shift device.
Yeah.
Like, you guys, the designers, found something new and interesting for us to be doing. And then you guys kept I would say, and I mean this not in any negative way, but you found a way to tell a fairly simple story in an interesting manner where, you know, you're trying to prevent the end of the world, essentially. Yeah. And you have a bad guy and you have a team of good guys and you're going after and doing it. But along the way, you get to meet these bosses, essentially, that come in. And I'm curious if you guys leaned to any anime or any older mech style combat stuff, where I kept waiting at some point for the classic anime, like, you know, headshot to slide in and be like, whoosh, Viper, and he like does some Dragon Ball Z pose or something like that, and then we go to it. Was that ever an inspiration?
Not for me, but I'm sure for Steve or for art and design. Like, I think they had, this is stuff they brought up after the release. They were like, oh, relating it to certain anime stories. Not anything that I was knowledgeable about, but they definitely had some inspiration from certain things.
You didn't show up with a stack of anime on your desk and they're like, welcome, Manny, get reading.
No, I showed up with a stack of Twilight Zone books and they're like, all right, Manny, get out of here.
So the last kind of two questions I have before some people on Twitter submitted some stuff. Mm-hmm. The first is, why continue the story from Titanfall 1, which I feel like you don't necessarily need to have played Titanfall 1 to understand Titanfall 2. But I did think it was a curious choice when Titanfall 1 kind of didn't have a story. Mm-hmm. Was there a conscious decision
that,
like, this is a sequel, we need to continue this?
I don't know. I don't necessarily, I mean, it is a sequel in a sense, but also extremely minimally. Like, it's not really that much of a sequel. I mean, it follows It takes place after events of Titanfall, but it's not doesn't necessarily you don't need any knowledge on who Sarah is or who Barker is. I mean, some of the characters don't make their way back into the game. They're just mostly fan favorites that we wanted to incorporate into the story. We didn't feel like we were forced to, like, you mean make it a sequel as opposed to what?
Well, I mean, I know it's called Titanfall 2 because it's second game, but I feel like as the first game with the single player campaign, you guys could have come in, I describe it as you're sitting in the middle of a blue ocean, right? You can go anywhere you want and it could have related to anything. And then as I'm playing it, I'm like, oh, this clearly takes place after the events of Titanfall 1. And Titanfall 1's story was a very thin, it felt added on to a multiplayer. And I'm not trying
that's fine.
Discredit any of the work people did on the first game, but I found it interesting that this wasn't...
You're a big asshole, that's all.
I'm just surprised that this wasn't kind of its own thing.
Why we didn't call it like Titanfall, you and your buddy Titan. I don't know if the question is why they named it Titanfall 2 or had it take place. I mean, I don't know why it was called Titanfall 2. I think it was just because it was the next Titanfall game.
The second Titanfall.
I don't think that was much like for us, didn't really put a lot of weight on that. As for taking place after the events of Titanfall 1, in my opinion, I like to think of it as not belittling what happened in Titanfall 1. Like, although the story for the majority of players did not come across as well, and rightfully so. I mean, we didn't have like cutscenes. We didn't have real cutscenes. We didn't have a single player campaign. So, but for those who did follow the story and who did kind of understand that there was a bit of a battle and that there were some characters that were memorable, I felt like we didn't want to act like that didn't happen. So taking place sort of 5 years after that makes you feel like this world is lived in a little bit, that this is something that's been going on. And I don't know if that is a bad thing or a good thing, but it definitely...
I felt like it was a good thing. I was just wondering if there was discussion or if maybe new fans to the game felt a little left out in some way. Like, this is the first time it's coming to the PlayStation 4. And I don't think that a gamer is like, wait, what's happening? It's not as if it's, you needed to watch it previously on. Like, in Titanfall 1, this happened. But it definitely, it starts you in a world. Like you said, it's a world that clearly has existed and existed before, and now you're kind of thrust into the middle of it. I didn't have a problem with it, but I was curious, to what extent that was a discussion.
But I think we just figured, what is the story that we want to tell? We didn't necessarily make those decisions based on whether or not people would play it or not, based on whether or not they didn't play the first game or something like that. Like, we were just like, what is the story we want to tell? And then when we came to the decision of a story of a young rifleman wanting to be a pilot in this war, it sort of fell into play that it would just take place after the events of Titanfall 1. I think that's as far as I was involved in that decision making. either it would be a sequel or it would be a prequel.
Right, sure.
It's only two options.
So my last thing, then I'll try to zip into a couple of these Twitter questions. I feel like it's a trend in current all media, be it movies, video games, TV shows, and it happens in Titanfall 2, and it happens in other big shooters that are out right now at this holiday season as well. You guys went for what I call the double death. And as someone who writes myself and tries to understand the medium and the act of writing and narrative storytelling, I kind of don't understand it. It happened in like Batman v Superman, where Superman dies and doesn't die. And in here, BT in Titanfall 2, BT dies and then doesn't die, but then dies. Mm-hmm. Is there an emotional something that I'm missing that's supposed to happen there where that hits me harder, or was it a gameplay move, or Do you have thoughts, feelings?
Yeah, I have a little bit of both thoughts and feelings. I think, and the answer is it was gameplay and story related thing. I think for me, I thought it was hilarious to kill them once and then kill them again. Because when you're telling a story that is so obvious that the, buddy that you are becoming close with who, throughout this entire thing is going to sacrifice himself for you. And people already called that from the beginning, like, oh, well, we know that's going to happen. We know it's going to happen.
Right. He's your dog that dies.
Yeah. So to have that happen, but then have the moment where you get him back and then have it happen again, gets this sort of emotional roller coaster, and it's unexpected, which I thought that, I mean, I don't know when we decide. I remember there were conversations of like, should we kill him twice? Is that weird if we have it happen twice? And this was based off of like what happens at the end of, the arc level versus what happens at the last level. We sort of had the gameplay already established and we knew what would happen. We didn't want to lose the moment at the end where he of the end of the arc level, the ship level, where he sort of protects you and becomes a little bit more human, and then you see him basically die in this, the beginning of the next level. We didn't want to lose that, but we also wanted him to do something heroic at the end of the game. So those two kind of fell into place. I mostly just think of it as, especially when I watch like Twitch players or whatever, like they're playing, they're like, oh no, he died. We knew he was going to die. And then he comes back and they're like, oh my God, he came back. And then I'm just like, but we're going to kill him again. And then we do. And then it's just this emotional reaction that we get. And that was kind of the ultimate goal. I mean, if we look at this whole story, and you had mentioned earlier about it was a simple story told in a unique way. Yes, the entire plot was extremely simple, and it needs to be. Some of these games need to be, because it's open to so many different players, types of players, people who concentrate so hard and they need to know what's happening in every little inch of the story, and then those who just fly by and try to beat the game in an hour. But if we can get this small plot across to both players, and keep it interesting for the ones who actually want to know every little detail, then that's great. But we actually, when we got to that sort of deciding on what we're going to do for the plot, that wasn't the story we wanted to tell. You know, from the beginning, we wanted to tell the story of this pilot and his pet dog, his pet Titan. And it's the story between the two, which is when the interactive dialogue came up, where you're able to actually talk to BT. That was a light bulb on everyone's head. That was just like, there, we got it. This is what we want to do. This is the story we want to tell. And back when I first started doing some writing, like, I don't know, whatever it was, over a year ago, I didn't quite know what to start writing. And that's when Jesse told me, he was like, why don't you just start working on these, like, sort of dialogue between BT and Cooper and come up with just normal conversations and stuff you would have and how you can develop this relationship. And he said it. He was like, this is what this story is going to be about. It's going to be about you and this Titan. And I think depending on certain players, when you get to the first losing of BT, depending on the way you played and how you chose your interactive dialogue, you have a certain emotion towards BT dying. And then when you get BT back, you have that another emotion. And then when you kill him again, you have another emotion. So you can get any emotion, like someone to feel sad about a robot in a video game, or someone to feel happy and joy, or even anger. I mean, that's a victory. And that was sort of the goal, was to get an emotion across in a video game where someone's just running around shooting people. So I stand by it. I'm glad we killed him twice.
No, that makes sense.
Twice.
at the end, I was, and I guess maybe it was effective to make me watch the credits, where I was like, come on, pull a Big Hero 6. Like, tell me at some point he shot his, like, his eye can, he can come out. You're not gonna Batman v Superman him, are you? Well, I guess actually they kind of don't kill him in that either. But it's like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, shame on me again. Fool me three times. Okay, I'm in this.
But he did stayed after the credits, though, right?
What?
He stayed after the credits, though, right?
Oh, yeah. Okay. I mean, I am in the industry enough where I stay through the credits. I will, yeah. So, I will watch a crawl.
There's something there.
So. Yeah. I mean, I didn't get to see Nick Fury come in and do something, but that's okay.
Oh, did you?
Oh, no, I missed it. I got to go back.
You don't know whatever that blinking was could have been Nick Fury. Oh, yes.
Confirmed. Exclusive.
I said it. Yep. BT and Cooper are joining the Avengers.
At this rate, they could. So a no comment is perfectly fine here. I mentioned before we started recording, I'm not trying to get in trouble. This is a very friendly interview. But from Twitter, the biggest question I see, as we're, you know, chewing up the clock, I don't want to keep you forever. Mm-hmm. The biggest question that people are asking is, we need more story. Respawn has come out and said it's going to be free DLC, free multiplayer. Yeah, it's great. The multiplayer is great. It's fun and it's engaging, whatever. But Agreeable Mika, will they be expanding the story in any way? I'll take something like Overwatch that has animated videos. Heck, I'll take something like Destiny with Grimoire cards. Will they be releasing any single player DLC? They said map DLC, but those villains had so much personality. I want more story. Please tell me there's more story behind the bosses. They are the coolest person in the game, and I feel like I just met them before I killed them. How many years after this game will we have to wait before we get more story? Please answer zero. So, I mean, the demand is there. I don't know if you can comment on bigger picture Titanfall universe stuff, but if you can and you would like to, I would love to hear it.
I cannot comment on anything. But there is a lot of story in both games, Titanfall and Titanfall 1. And you could probably find a lot of the stuff on YouTube now, hopefully. But there is a lot of story, hidden little story nooks that if they really are itching to know some more stuff, there's a lot to find in the effect and cause level. I know for a fact that there are 5 audio logs that nobody has found yet.
Okay.
And if they found it, it would be on the internet, and I've been looking, and so far nobody's found that.
All right, I gotta go. This is great. Thanks, Manny. Bye.
And they may or may not be voiced by someone who is an established actor. You can, they're on the, in the credits, so you can look at the credits, but that hasn't yet to be discovered. So I encourage anyone to try to find those 5 audio logs. There are also, I think, another 5 audio logs in that level. I think there are 10 that you can find throughout that level that give a little bit more story and a little in depth of what's been going on. And I know this has been found, but there is the entire full speech that General Martyr gives in that lecture hall. You know, when you walk into the lecture hall for the first time, you see like him giving a little bit of the speech. And then ends, and you go to the podium, and you can listen to some of the speech, but there, later in the game, you can find another audio log that has his full, I think it's like 3 to 5 minute long speech. So that's another little detail. And as for Titanfall 1, then these are videos you can find online if you just listen for all the grunts. Like, they tell a lot of exposition. They tell a lot of their own personal stories and names and characters and a lot of setup there. And there weren't that many opportunities for Titanfall 2 for that, but there are when you are with certain sort of militia guys, you can listen in and hear a lot of extra story bits. And one thing I did is I created a character named Barry, and Barry so far has been in both games. So if you can find Barry. Other than that, no comment.
Yeah, so the official answer is no comment, colon, there's more story in the game. Go find the story that's still there.
Go find the story. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
For people that are trying to stalk you online and maybe suss out some more story details, is there somewhere that you want to send people to Twitter or anything, or questions or comments to questions@respawn.com or anything like that?
I don't know any Respawn questionionnaire.
Email. Not 1-900 Titanfall 2 tips.
No, they'll just call you. I think they can follow me on Twitter. I think it's what is my Twitter? It's just @MannyHagopian. And they could find me and ask questions. I had someone the other day ask me a question about how Anderson ended up in the ceiling. So that was fun. You can do that. You can ask questions if you want, and I may or may not answer them. We'll see.
Nice. A little bit of mystery. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. And congrats on an incredible, incredible game.
Oh, thanks so much for playing the game. I'm glad everyone likes it. And I hope you guys keep playing it and tell your friends.